Hi, this is Chris Evans recording another Storage Unpacked podcast. This week, I'm just joined by Martin. How are you doing, Martin?
Hey, Chris, how are you?
Yeah, not too bad, thanks. What's happened to this Gavin guy? Where is he?
I don't know. I think he's got Ebola.
I must admit, I hope he hasn't, because I did see him last week, as did you, at Cloud Expo. So I'm really hope he hasn't. But at some stage, I guess he'll join us. But this week, it's just the two of us, no guest. And what we're going to talk about is the idea of 100 terabyte drives, super high capacity. Well, how can we describe it? Ultra capacity drives, something like that, perhaps?
Yeah, ultra capacity seems about right. It's, 100 terabytes. And I think 100 terabytes and beyond.
Exactly, 100 terabytes and beyond. So this week we're going to talk about it and say, are they really practical? Would you do it? What could you build with them? What would the cost be like? And, operationally, can you really use them? So let me set some background to that. The reason I thought this would be an interesting topic is because one of the companies out there, Nimbus, have come out with a 100 terabyte drive. It's actually a 3.5-inch drive rather than a 2.5-inch one. And typically the 2.5-inch ones are now pushing about 30 terabytes. But it's 100 terabytes in a single unit or 50. Bit of clever stuff in there to stop it needing huge amounts of power. But effectively, it's a SATA drive with 100 terabytes in it. And that just seems to me to be crazy. Now, just one other thing to add before I pass over to you, Martin, and that's we're also seeing other formats come along, which we should discuss, like Ruler. And they're in a similar sort of range around that 32 terabyte mark. And it could well be that they get pushed to higher and higher limits through the technology. But, initially, from a technical perspective, what do you think about 100 terabytes in a single unit?
Well, part of that is your huge failure domain. I mean, you lose one of those. That's a lot of data, Chris. But not so long ago, 100 terabytes was a reasonably sized SAN.
Yeah, now that's the first thing to think of is exactly that. That 100 terabytes would have been a reasonably good single array with lots of redundancy, lots of error detection and rebuild and all the stuff that goes around it. And now we're talking about something that you can, I guess, put in the palm of your hand. You can't really put it in your pocket quite, but certainly put in the palm of your hand that could hold what we used to put in an entire array. It just seems absolutely mad.
Yeah, I mean, I saw actually... Just take it a bit smaller. I saw somebody tweet last week about something and saying, "Oh, my home NAS is now 19 terabytes. And then they equated about how much that would have cost them 25 years ago. And it's many millions of pounds. I mean, that's quite a scary thing, even on our desktops. I mean, even the largest hard drives now, if you were to purchase that amount of capacity 20, 25 years ago, that's a lot of money. And that was a reasonable size enterprise as well.
Yep, it is. It's a huge amount of money. Now, just for the hard drive Luddites who are still out there and don't want to talk flash, obviously the hard drives are pushing 14 terabytes now with potentially a roadmap for considerably more. And in fact, I think Chris Miller showed me a roadmap that he did an article on last week, and we're going to see increased performance out of those drives and increased capacity going forward. So even hard drives are going to be pushing crazy capacities in the future and only basically still serving data out of a single interface, potentially still only having a 2 to 2.5 million hour lifetime. And initially, when you look at that, you think that's a lot of stuff in one device.
Yeah. I mean, even if you were to look at probably, I think one way many people think the most reliable form of storage is tape, and LTO7's only 6 terabytes uncompressed. We're now talking about hard drives, flash drives, and online formats, which are larger than the backup devices.
And now I hadn't thought about the tape side of things, but that is a big difference. That is a huge difference. Let's just think about that device in its own right, first of all. Now, one of the things I've always wondered, and you might be able to answer this, you might not be able to, is if you actually look at the way those devices are made, certainly say an SSD, for example, there are actually many, many individual chips or dies. The ones today are about 0.5 terabyte each, all folded up in a very sort of clever origami-style arrangement inside the actual unit. And then that's then powered with a controller or multiple controllers that make it work. Now, in the case of the 100 terabyte drive, it's something like 200 plus drives because you need some for over-provisioning. But the first thing that I always think is, what happens if some of that decides to break, if you get issues on the NAND somewhere, or if the controller goes, how repairable do you reckon those devices are?
Well, we know, it's a pity Gavin's not on this, actually, if you were looking, think of his past career. XIO used to talk about the fact that, certainly in a hard drive situation, most of the failures were controller failures. And it was just a case of reblowing the firmware. It was something like that, which was generally caused a failure. So I think if you had a controller, there may be a couple of ways around it. It may just be a reblow of the firmware, or it might be replace the controller. It depends where the encryption keys and such things are kept, but I would have thought replacing the controller on a 100 terabyte drive seems to make a lot of sense. I would say if you've got partial failures in the NAND chips themselves, that's probably going to be a bit more hairy. It's going to be a bit more scary. Depends. I don't know how the data is written across, but if you've just lost chunks of data, I'm not sure how easy that will be to recover. But I would have thought controllers, that's got to be. And I would have thought even if they're not prepared in place, they're going to be going back and the drive manufacturer or the array vendor is going to be repairing those.
So we need to talk to one of the drive manufacturers, I guess, at some stage and get them to explain. But I would hope that to a certain degree internally, the drives would be relatively modular. So if imagine, and I got a picture of one somewhere, I'll stick it on the website. But one of the events we went to, I think it was SanDisk, had a device that you could have a look at, and it sort of butterflies open and you can see all the chips and stuff. What I don't know is whether you can actually detach any of those, whether it's modular. So if you imagine you've got one chip fails on one particular component, can you take that off and just accept that's the minimum failure, inverted commas, domain, or the minimum failure unit within that device? It would make sense to sort of build it in a modular fashion, I would have thought.
But this throws up some really interesting problems for enterprises, full stop. 100 terabytes is a lot of data. Your 100 terabytes on a drive, which potentially could be recovered, your data, the potential for data leak at that point is massive.
Yeah, so encryption becomes, I mean, obviously you would, yeah, you would encrypt anyway, but encryption becomes ultra important.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Otherwise, I mean, you could lose your customer data. Yeah. Customer database would be out. And 100 terabytes of data is enough that even with encryption, it becomes an attractive attack surface. There's a lot of data on there. So depending how you're going to spread it, probably means that we're going to start talking about how you protect these within a device, how many you're going to have. And then that will bring us on to what is the logical size of an array or a storage device with these in.
Let's just talk about that then. So if you've got a 100 terabyte device, I mean, if you had a 14 terabyte hard drive, you would potentially look at that and say, I would have to protect that with RAID 6 if I was using RAID as a minimum, dual parity. Now, at that level with RAID, and we'll come back to erasure coding in a minute, but with RAID, I would look at that and think dual parity might not even be enough. I maybe want to use triple parity. And I wonder whether that's an issue just in general, that you have to have a large number of devices in order to implement some sort of protection scheme.
Well, I don't think you protect it with RAID, not with a traditional RAID. I think you're going to move to one of the micro RAID schemes. You're going to have to. So when you go into a rebuild, you have multiple devices all taking part in a rebuild. So think going back in the day to XIV, then pushing it forward to people like 3PAR with micro RAID, and then we have all the successor devices which seem to have come out from those stables. So you're not going to do a traditional RAID with this. Well, I would suggest you're not going to do a traditional RAID with this.
Yeah, that makes more sense. But you potentially might look at it and say erasure coding might be a more suitable way to do it. But in some respects, erasure coding and that sort of distributed clever RAID are fairly similar in their thinking.
Yeah. I think I predicted a few years ago on my blog way back that we were going to see the death of RAID or traditional RAID. And that was with relatively small drives. And we're talking about 6 terabyte drives and things like that. But now we're at 14 and above. I wouldn't be comfortable with keeping data on that, which I was not afraid to lose if I was protecting with a traditional RAID schema.
So let's touch on I'll keep talking about the RAID side of things, the rebuild side of things. I looked at the 100 terabyte drive and wrote a post about it. One of the things that stands out is the fact that it has a certain throughput rate, which I think, top of my head, I think it's about 500 megabytes a second, read and write. Now that translates to around 55 hours to write the entire device, which means that if you did have to do a rebuild of the full 100 terabytes, which doesn't sound like you'd want to anyway because of everything else that's going on, but that would be a rebuild of at least a minimum of 55 hours, which, again, is a real risk for 100 terabytes worth of data.
And I don't know what the factors are like for flash drives. We know that if you've had one failure in a RAID rank, the odds of you getting a second one seem to go up. Everybody seems to think it's an unusual situation. But because you're putting your whole array or RAID rank under extra pressure, you are increasing your likelihood of a failure as well. So you do not want to be unprotected for that long.
Yeah, so what we're saying is the fact that you're doing rebuilds stresses the other devices because they're involved in a lot more work than they would be. And effectively, that's why you think that you might see multiple failures occurring within that same RAID group.
I can see it's probably less bad for flash because you don't have the moving parts. I can see why it's a much bigger problem in hard drives. But because flash drives, I would expect to tend to fail under write and not under read.
Yeah, true. So what do we think the minimum size of array we would need to build would be then, in terms of making sure that we could still protect all of that data across enough devices to make sure that if we did have a failure in any one single drive, we could carry on running.
I'm thinking a minimum of, I don't know, 15 to 20 drives in that array. That's going to take, that takes you probably to 2 petabytes of flash. And then you're going to be reserving, I think you're going to have to reserve for rebuild. I think that's how you do it. You'd have to reserve for rebuild on each of those drives. So everything can take part in a rebuild. So when you're redistributing data, you've got that reserve. But then you may be in a situation when you replace one drive, I still think you end up with a hot spare. You replace one, but you suddenly end up with a rebalance. I'm just thinking about the math behind this. This is not a simple solution to solve with the current data rates.
You just pointed out something which I think is that can take us on to that next discussion, and that's hot spare or spare space or extra capacity or whatever. My understanding in the current market, the pricing is around about 50 to 60 cents a gigabyte for flash if you were buying it as a device, okay?
Yeah.
Now, on that basis, 100 terabytes comes out at around a $50,000 device, and a 30 terabyte drive, they think with the previous devices, they were talking about them being about $15,000-$16,000. So imagine these ones could be anywhere between sort of $12,000-$15,000 for a 30 terabyte drive. That in itself, just the fact that one device costs that much money, that's a huge amount of unused capacity just be lying around just in case you have a failure.
Well, yeah. So what are you going to do? Are you going to have two? So your minimum size will be two drives where you just run fully mirrored and just hope you have time to get that second one in and re-mirror. But at least it's probably not the world's worst. It's a pretty terrible scenario, but I think you could do it that way. But as soon as you go above mirroring, I don't know. I'm trying to get my head around this idea at the moment.
Yeah, what I'm thinking of is if I was buying from a vendor and a vendor wants to build me a system or ships me $15,000 worth of SSD as a single device, that's a huge amount of inventory and money that's locked up in supply potentially, depending on how their distribution model works. You know, so going into a traditional enterprise array, this drive makes no sense. I mean, there's lots of other reasons why it makes no sense, but purely from that maintenance and stock and everything else, I don't see how vendors could actually make it work because it would just be too difficult. Do you see where I'm going?
I do see where you're going. It makes no sense in a traditional array. It makes no sense in a traditional server. If you put one into a server, of which I can imagine some people say, oh, that'd be marvellous. I could have 30 terabytes of flash in my server. But if it's a single server, it makes no sense. It's only when we start going much larger. So, for instance, if you were to, say, have a, it doesn't have to be a huge server estate, but a server estate which had, I don't know, 50 servers, 30 terabyte drive in each of them, but you're suddenly talking about a huge amount of data, right? Most businesses won't fill that. We won't get anywhere near it. I mean, I don't think very many people realize how much 30 terabytes is. If you're just running a business where you've got stock control systems, some documents, maybe some graphics, some PowerPoints, you're not going to get anywhere near 30 terabytes. 30 terabytes is a reasonable size NAS device for an enterprise for their file shares.
Fair point. So I would agree with you entirely. And I think, you know, in that scenario, you would look at this and say that this device is probably very specifically targeted at hyperscalers who can actually justify putting them into analytics or very, very large organizations who've got the need to run very high performance and very high fast, say, read intensive analytics that need low latency. But it doesn't sort of have a practical use in an enterprise market.
Not in traditional enterprise, as you said, as you move to more to analytics and maybe Internet of Things and connected devices, it starts to make more sense. Or you might, you know, I could see potentially online businesses using it to deploy onto the edge.
Yeah, true. Now, we'll come back to that because obviously there's a question there as to whether the ability to produce a 100 terabyte device could actually translate into saying, well, why don't just make a smaller 10 terabyte device? We'll talk about that in a moment. But just one last thought on that whole price and cost of an individual unit. Remember, I think we talked on a previous podcast about the theft of memory from, actually, I don't know whether it was on a podcast, it was a friend was talking to me about the theft of memory from servers. Do you remember when memory was so expensive people were breaking into offices and ripping servers or desktops open and stealing the memory?
Oh yeah, I worked for a company at the time where their office was broken into and they caught on CCTV people trying to steal some PS2s out of the building. That's how long ago it was, but certainly, yeah, at that point memory was more expensive than gold.
But it makes you wonder whether that if you created a single stealable unit, a drive that was worth $50,000, it's becomes very stealable again, you know, because all you got to do is stick a couple in your coat and you're gone, and there's $100,000. Even if you sold them at a tenth of the price of what they were worth, you still could make a fortune by breaking in and stealing them.
Probably, yeah. Look at the comparable weight between that and a comparable weight in gold or something like that is probably substantially more expensive than gold.
Or printer ink.
Or printer ink, yeah.
Yeah, which obviously is the most expensive commodity on the planet.
Well, yeah, I think we should have got into printer in the future. It was about 10 years ago. I think we'd be millionaires. We wouldn't be podcasting now.
Yeah. I think that one has passed us by, unfortunately. Yeah. Okay, let's talk a bit more about the practical side. So, you know, we talked about the size of an array. We've talked about the device itself in terms of the rebuild times and all the rest of it. Are we just being old? You know, are we looking at this, and because we were used to devices that were much, much smaller and had a lot lower capacity, are we just being old-fashioned? You know, is this just the future, and is this just where things are headed?
I think it's for future. I don't think we're just being old. I think we're being wise, not old. There you go. We're wise.
Okay, that's like a fair compromise. Now, I think from my perspective, and going back to this whole idea about the device factor size, the size of the devices and stuff, I do think there's a question here that says, should we go for smaller units and build things that are smaller if we could actually get some sort of device that we could do it actually practically with, from the mechanics and the cooling and the power and all the rest of it. I think that there's a real trade-off between all of this. So if you look at the ruler format that I was talking about earlier, some people might have seen that, might have not seen it, but basically it is like a long, thin device that looks like a long, thin packet, a bit like a
ruler.
Yeah, like a ruler, but except most people didn't have rulers that were about a centimeter or so thick at school. You know, your ruler was normally very thin. So the ruler concept is more the two-dimensional shape of it, but then it's obviously thick, isn't it, like a packet.
I'm disappointed they haven't gone for a Toblerone format, a prism.
But then a Toblerone format would be great because you could stack them on top of each other at opposite angles. So, you know, you could have the bottom row facing up would be like the mountains, and then the ones pointing down would be the inverted mountains, and they'd all zigzag against each other, and they'd tessellate perfectly. So
yeah, it'd look great. There you go. That's our hint to any flash manufacturers out there. We need Toblerone-shaped flash drives.
The only problem is that one day they'd come along and there'd be 10% less in there than there was the week before. Same size packet.
Yeah, I could see that. Well, that's for Brexit. The Brexit impact on the storage market.
Exactly. So, okay, being serious for a second, there are other formats that are things like M2, U2, the smaller devices that look a bit like a memory stick in some respects. And I did think quite a few years ago that we were missing a trick there because we could use those for building out servers, but they're not really practical because they're a bit flimsy and all the rest of it. But I wonder whether there's an opportunity to look at something that allows us to have a smaller device but with a similar capacity on it, so that there's a smaller failure domain, there's the ability to spread the data across more devices. But then I think there's a real mass equation there that says cost might not be practical compared to the power and cooling and everything, and you know, physically fitting it in with the space inside the space of a server, which is why rulers take, I guess, being used as an idea.
I mean, it'd be interesting conversation and the next time we have Jim on to talk about the components within a flash device. So obviously you have the NAND, but when you've got the controllers, and where is the cost? How much is a controller as a proportion of the cost of it? So if we had smaller drives, but the smaller drives would need separate controllers, so we'd have more controllers. What would the impact be on the cost there?
As far as I'm aware, something like 80 or 90%. I think Jim actually talked about this. I think I'm going to guess, because I can't go back and play the podcast in the middle of our recording, but I'm fairly certain he said it was 80, 90% of the cost of a drive is the NAND. It could even be higher. I mean, obviously, and with a bigger capacity drive, the higher the percentage of the cost is the NAND.
Yeah, so I think you're probably right that we might see smaller, physically smaller devices with less on. You could fit those nicely on a server motherboard these days. You could dot them in between the PCIe slots if you wanted, and you could have a number of these onboard RAID or however you want to do it, get some additional performance. You know, obviously, you're going to start running out PCIe lanes, but your protection will be better and you will have more on board, and that's what everybody wants.
It sounds to me that there's a middle ground there where if you look at NVDIMM, which is going to go in a memory slot, and you've got PCIe slots, that there might even be this scenario where you could find a middle ground where there's another scenario where you could build many, many slots, but have them as like onboard SSD, but in a, you know, something a bit more resilient than a sort of a flexible slot. So maybe there's options there.
Yeah, I think there probably are. So let's just think, we're talking about 100 terabytes today, Chris.
Yep.
So 200 terabytes when? 300 terabytes when?
Well, okay. So good question. Let's think about the actual device itself and what it's built from and where we could be going. So the particular device in question from Nimbus is using MLC. So it's not using anywhere near the latest technology, which means that they can increase the capacity by using TLC. And again, they could do it again with QLC. Now, obviously, there's an issue of resilience and all the rest of it in that. But when by no means is that device, as Jeremy Corbyn would say, as ram-packed as you could possibly get away with. That device is reasonably, still has plenty of scope, I should say, for capacity nasty growth. So this time next year, I laughed at it, and I looked at it last year. I went back and had a look, and the 50 terabyte drive was announced about August time last year. And here we are 6 months later, just over, and we have 100 terabytes. So in 12 months time, why wouldn't we have 200 terabyte drives?
Well, you think about it. So you said the 100 terabyte drive is a 5-inch drive or a 5.25-inch drive?
It's a 3.5-inch drive.
Oh, 3.5-inch drive. Sorry, yeah. But you can probably work it out, and you can probably, how many 2.5-inch drives can you fit in the form factor of a 3.5-inch drive?
4. Turn it sideways and you can stick them too high and too wide.
Yeah. So that's we've already got 30 terabytes in 2.5-inch drives straight away. So that's 120 terabytes.
Yes, because the 30 terabyte drives are using TLC. They're using more dense flash.
Yeah, I think so we can probably actually go denser again. I think 200 terabytes is well within our future now. 5 drives potentially will give you a petabyte if you're talking about 200 terabytes per drive. Just think about what that means in 2U.
It means that you would have devices that you simply couldn't afford to buy because they would be so expensive, and you wouldn't even know what would have anything to do with them. You know, so many companies are not going to have anything to do with, they can do with it. But I do think it comes back to one of the things you said at the very beginning. This could be the sort of device that becomes much more useful for IoT type solutions where they need a lot more capacity in a smaller space, and that might be the more practical use for this.
But was that, and content delivery solutions. I was just thinking about what I do in my day job. So sticking a large amount of flash in a very small, dense form factor, drop them into exchanges, even into broadband cabinets. So if you want to, if Netflix, my employer, anyone wants to start caching off large amount of data dotted around the place, it's a viable thing.
Okay, so there are definite uses for it, just not going to be an enterprise device.
Yeah, definite uses for it. It probably needs to come down a bit in price, but yeah, I can see definite uses for it, but not in the enterprise, and probably not in your laptop either.
What we should do is we should set a date and say, let's see 12 months from now whether we're right and whether we've got 200 terabyte drives in 12 months' time.
And if anybody wants people to try out their 200 terabyte drives, you can get in contact with me and Chris, and we'll happily take a couple off your hands and have a play.
Absolutely. We will more than happily test anything from 30 terabytes upwards.
Yeah, that's where we are now. It's like we used to frown when we got USB drives of, I don't know, a couple of gig. Now we're up to what we need, at least 8, probably 16 to be interesting. And now if you want to start throwing flash drives our way, let's start at 30 terabytes.
Absolutely. All right, Martin, sounds good. Just to remind everybody, where can they find you online?
Oh, you can find me online on Twitter most of the time at StorageBod. Generally, I haven't written a blog post in ages, so my best place to find me is that. Oh, and I have occasion post stuff on LinkedIn, but not very often.
I'm at Chris M. Evans on Twitter, and you can find the podcast at storageimpact.com. We'd be very keen if you went into iTunes and gave us a recommendation, some feedback, and 5 stars, clearly. And obviously, we'll be back next time with another Storage Unpacked podcast episode. Thanks for listening.